Hello, everyone, and welcome to 24 Shades of Blue. My name is Anime, and I'm your new host for this series. On today's episode, we are going to be going behind the scenes of the Missing Persons Unit and learning all about them and how they have progressed to today. Joining us, we have Acting Detective Sergeant Steve Smith, as well as Detective Shona Patterson. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Anime.
And so, Steve, you've been here before, but we don't really know too much about you. And Shona, you're a new guest for us. Can you tell us a little bit about yourselves?
Well, I was hired with TPS in 1996. From there, I was assigned to 251 Division. I worked a number of units in 51 Division, the crew unit, the MCU unit, order management unit, the CIB. About 3 years in, I went to the drug squad and I worked the street teams in the drug squad. From there, I went to the major project section of drugs. After that, I went back to the street teams in the drug squad. I went to the provincial rope unit from the drug squad. From there, I spent 10 months at the RCMP Immigration Task Force. I was actually promoted out of there and I went back to 51 as a sergeant. From there, I went to the CIB again and then to the MCU as a detective. From there, I went to the holdup squad for 4 years. And then in 2017, I came to homicide as a detective. And for the past 2.5 years, I've been acting detective sergeant in charge of homicide, missing persons, both the cold case unit, the missing persons unit, the forensic video, and the major case management units.
Wow, what an established career. And I can't wait to delve deeper into that. And Shona, how about yourself?
So in 2005, I was hired with the Toronto Police Service. And I've had a great career. I started at 54 Division, which is East York area of the city. And from there, I worked the Youth Bureau as well as the CIB. And then I was very fortunate to come to Sex Crimes here at headquarters. And I did the majority of my career at Sex Crimes. And then fortunately, about a year ago, I joined Steve at the Missing Persons Unit. I'm very lucky and fortunate to have someone that does have a very vast career and the experience that Steve does, because on a daily basis, I go to him for advice. And so I am a newly promoted officer as well. So detective is something that's new to me, this rank. So not only just like the experience in supervising others, working well with others, but just the content and the experience and the direction.
No, that's fantastic. And you mentioned that just with the experience of Steve, that's really helped you along in your career. And all that, I mean, both of you have so many different avenues that you've experienced. With us, could you teach us a little bit more about what the Missing Persons Unit is all about? What is the role and how has it changed over the years?
The Missing Persons Unit obviously was established in the last few years. It was part of the service looking into how we dealt with the missing persons, and it became part of the MacArthur investigation, where there were certain cracks where people fell through no fault of the investigators and such, but it was just a process that we had to fix to make sure that these things didn't happen anymore. There was actually a judicial review that provided 151 recommendations that were in the process of implementing within Toronto. The beginning of the missing persons unit, because it was so small, we were originally just kind of a quality control unit to make sure that the divisions were doing what was needed. But as we've been able to expand, as per the recommendations, we now have a unit where we actually go out and take on a lot of these calls and actually work alongside the investigators to ensure the best possible outcome for all the missing people. And Shona can probably elaborate a bit from there.
Yeah, so we're really grateful for that original team that came and started Missing Persons Unit. So they really established and brought the service up to standard. So it was, like Steve said, a very much of a quality control unit, but it was very important for liability and ensuring that, for example, we had a lot of information only reports out there in the field, and they weren't necessarily deemed missing persons. So that means, are they on our radar? Are they following up? So they really established a good standing for missing persons and a platform that we were able to build from that. And now we provide 24-hour coverage. So we have a new mandate. We've moved away from the quality control. The divisions handle that. And we're deployed at very high-risk situations. So a process that we put in place is monitoring that call. As soon as that missing person call hits the board, whether it's a 911 call or just a regular non-emergency call, we're monitoring that for risks and different vulnerabilities, different marginalized communities that might be involved in that call. And we're bringing that to the investigators right away and reaching out to divisions and potentially deploying into the field to support that investigation. So when we went live with the new mandate, we were deployed 80 times within the first month. So I think we are making a difference and an impact in the community as well as our service.
And so when we're looking at a missing person statement, what do we normally tell the public? And how has that changed from when the missing persons units first started until what we see now?
Okay, great question. I'll give you a little history on that. So there is a, so Steve had mentioned the report by the Honorable Justice Epstein. From that, the Toronto Police, they created a really specialized team of both community members as well as police officers. And they're called the Missing and Missed Implementation Team. So because of our position at Homicide and Missing Persons Unit, we're not necessarily a member of the MMIT, but we definitely get to sit in and be exposed to all the discussions that are happening because we truly bring that change management focus to the rest of the city, all the divisions. So it's not necessarily one of the recommendations. However, with community members that are involved on the implementation team, they were very open with us and they shared their experiences on they were missing people in the past and how they were impacted personally by media releases, by police. So we took that into consideration and we looked a little deeper and found out, what are we actually asking the public to do? Is it necessary to share all of that person's details? How do we protect their privacy while they're missing? It's such a fine balance. And obviously there's always exception to every single rule. So if there is circumstances that require us to publish more, we will, but those are very rare situations. So in December, we moved forward to only publish the person's first name, and we will no longer publish their gender, their date of birth. And I think there's a few other things that we've left out as well. Like, for example, a lot of times the only picture that we're able to obtain is sometimes a police photo. So we're really hesitant to release something like that, again, to protect that person's privacy. And the idea behind it is that person's going to be found. We're very confident that we will locate that person and let's put the proper resources in that person's life. So they're back in the community, they're back thriving in the community and they're not having to go to a job interview. And what do we all do these days? People that go on job interviews, they go on their first dates, they're Googling everyone that they meet. So it's unfortunate and unfair for somebody to walk into an interview and say, and be questioned, why did you go missing in the past? Tell us more about that. That is a very personal experience for that person and has nothing to do with their qualities or what their skill level is for that particular job. So that's just one example of why we moved away from that. And it's something that we're measuring the impact along the way, but we believe that it's the right move. And there's some other services that follow behind us. So we're really happy to see that as well.
Yeah. And I mean, the world's changed. Obviously now, once something's published, it's all over the world in seconds. And I mean, there are people out there that will put these things up on their websites and then try to charge to take them down. So if we're providing as little information as possible, but enough information to find this person, that's our goal. It's all things that we've been able to identify and hopefully correct and hopefully make things better for everybody in the public and the public at large. And again, to find people in the best possible condition that we can find them in and as quickly as possible.
And it seems like the Toronto Police and especially your unit has been the pioneer in this division of missing persons. So with all of these changes, how has that impacted the rules and the processes that other detectives follow across Canada?
Well, that's interesting. We're really fortunate. So part of the Missing and Missed report, it has really shaken up investigators across Canada. And I actually think it's had probably further reach right into the US as well. So we sit on both provincial and national working groups. And that includes officers from across Canada, as well as like often from the province of Ontario. So everyone now is taking into consideration like building best practices and not only for their particular services, but how do we do this together? So it's a standardized best practice across the nation.
And I mean, we really should be the leaders in this with the volume of calls, really every call, but missing persons as well. The volume that we have to be able to show the way for people that may only get a few a year and may not have that experience. We're dealing with this on an everyday basis, not only the ones that we're we're getting. But we have a lot that are cold cases as well. Ones that were people were never found back in the day, or we have unidentified human remains. So we're taking those out and we're applying genetic genealogy to our unidentified human remains to try to give these people back their names. So we have so many of these that it's a process that we have to undertake and hopefully lead for everybody else. So if anyone has a question or they have something that they haven't seen before, they can give us a call and one of our investigators can at least give them some ideas of what we've done in the past.
Just one other thing, something that Steve had mentioned is, you know, when we do build relationships and rely on them across Canada and into the US. So missing persons, as we know, they have no borders. So we really shouldn't be putting up borders with our services that are around us, and whether they border us or they're across Canada in Vancouver, we need to keep that line of communication open. And I think we've been very humble about the approach that we've taken with the 151 recommendations. That we do have really great working relationships with the other services across Ontario.
And that's really interesting. You talk about information and keeping transparent across the country and other countries too. So what is this? I've heard of this missing report. What is this missing report? And what do you want the public to know about it?
So I think what you might be asking about is the Missing Person Act, the new legislation that allows us to gather more information for the missing person report. So before 2019, we didn't have the ability. We would rely on our partners, such as cell phone companies and banks, to share information with us based on humanitarian compassion. So now we have legislation that's very powerful that allows us to write production orders and search warrants to search for a missing person. Because if we were to say, go to a company and say, we'd really like to obtain their cell phone records, and they say no, that was it, unfortunately. So now we're able to dive a lot deeper and learn about this person along the way and hopefully locate them based on the information we're gathering.
Yeah, the Ontario government did a great job in providing us with that because before we didn't have an offense to write to. So if there's not a criminal offense, you don't have the ability to compel people to provide you with information that may help you find a person. So you were relying on the fact that it was exigent circumstances and hoping that people would assist you. But now we have the ability to be able to require companies, and it works for the companies as well, because they would sometimes be like, well, we have to protect the privacy of our people, the people that we're serving. And there's a fine line there between helping to find somebody that's missing and protecting people's privacy. Because not everybody that goes missing, some people go missing because they want to go missing, right? Whatever's happening in their lives at that time, they just want to go somewhere else and start a new life. So you have to be cognizant of that. And this legislation allows us to be able to find the information that we need, protect the company's privacy rights, and be able to make sure that that person is fine. And if they're making a different choice in their life and they want to do something else, that's great, as long as they're fine in the fact that they're doing that.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you're saying is you're really marrying the privacy and the long-term impact on missing people. And everything that you've said so far, just the procedures, the new procedures that you've implemented, the new government acts that have been enacted, does promote that. So that's fantastic to see how things have iterated. And so when we're looking at iterations and how things have changed, I think the Missing Persons Unit has also implemented a new workshop, and a workshop with the unit and the teams. Do you think you can talk a little bit about that?
Thank you for asking about it. We're really excited about it. So we're hosting a workshop for the community members that have given their time on the Missing and Missed implementation team. So what we've noticed that we pepper them continuously with police jargon, our procedures, and they're doing such a great job. And I hope that they also realize that we see their vision and we're implementing that in our strategies. However, I think what's missing is that operational piece. Like, how are they, what is their experience responding to missing person calls? We don't have that, and that's lacking. So we want to provide them like a realistic experience. So we've designed 5 different scenarios, ranging from a missing child to a missing elderly, people that struggle with different kinds of vulnerabilities. So they're going to be responding to that next Monday, and hopefully we're going to debrief every scenario, and hopefully they'll learn something. And what we also hope, it brings a better idea of like organizational awareness in the sense of like how things actually flow from the very beginning of that call to the very end.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's organizational theory versus organizational behavior. And missing persons are so complex and there's so many variables that we have to be able to show the community how difficult some of these investigations can be. But if you have the knowledge and you have the willingness to continue to work these investigations, all of them are solvable. We can bring people back, as I said, in the best possible condition that we can possibly bring them back in. Our goal is to find everybody and find everybody well and make sure that they get any supports that they need, depending on what's going on in their lives. But it's a complexity that really needs to be out there to show how difficult each call and how different each call can be.
You mentioned community members, and how do you find these community groups and organizations to participate? And curious if the public, if they are interested, how would they be involved?
Well, I understand that they went through quite an intensive interview process to be part of the Missing and Missed implementation team. Steve and I weren't involved in that, but I think they did a couple interviews, and then it's really, you're devoting your time. So every single week we have working groups. Every first Thursday of the month, we have a 3-hour meeting. So it's a lot of time, their personal time that they're giving up to be part of this. As for like the rest of the public, if they are listening to this and they're really interested in something like this, or they have an organization that want to experience something like this, I would suggest like, please reach out to the Missing Persons unit. And our email is just missingpersons@torontopolice.on.ca. Pretty simple. And express your interest, because there's something that we might be able to design. And we are always looking for community groups and engagement to work with, because this is not necessarily a criminal investigation. And that's a huge misconception by both police and as well as the community. So when we're talking about putting out new media releases, we want the public to see that this is not a criminal investigation. This person has done nothing wrong. And we really rely on our community partners to assist in finding that person. So anytime that anyone's willing to work with us, if we can create a few scenarios to have that more realistic approach, we would love to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when a person goes missing, there's millions of eyes in Toronto, and we want to mobilize all those eyes to help find this person.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any last messages for our listeners?
Well, I guess two things. Just the future of the Missing Person Unit. We're very lucky to announce that we have 4 brilliant civilians. They're going to be joining our team in a couple weeks. They're going to be missing person coordinators. So they have a huge job ahead of them. They're going to be not only assigned to 2 investigators each in the unit to support, as well as to be deployed into the field. But it's going to be a really interesting investigative position for the civilians. And we also are working on preventative pieces as well. What that exactly looks like, I'm not sure, but we are definitely looking for the preventive piece and then the restorative piece as well. I think that goes hand in hand with missing persons.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, on top of all that, the investigators are still working their cases from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and we're actually getting a lot of traction in identifying these people. So hopefully over the next few months, we're going to be able to come out with a number of news releases of people that have been unidentified for years and decades, and we're actually going to give them their name back and be able to notify the families that we have actually found their family member that's gone missing years ago.
Wow, that's incredible. Which just the change of technology and process improvements. Where are we now? That's incredible. And so thank you to both of you for joining us for this podcast. And thank you to all of our listeners. This is 24 Shades of Blue. My name is Anime, and I will see you next time.